Hello everybody, my name is Faris Al-Nazi again, and welcome back in Faris Show. So Faris Show is basically a show that talks about Saudi Arabia when it comes to culture, economy, political, many things. And last episode was about culture with Dr. Sue Jameson. Today's episode will be about economy with Professor John, a professor of economy in Robert Morris University. Hello, Dr. John.
Hi, how are you? I'm what is called an adjunct professor. I do this part-time. I've been doing it for 12 years. And I have to tell you, I think there a lot of the people that I've taught, you would have been amazing how many Al-Nazis I've taught, how many Al-Qahtanis I've taught. The tribes are everywhere. It's very interesting to see the same similar names come up every year. They were great students. The Saudis are great students.
Thank you so much, Dr. Don. And I want to ask you about the economy of Saudi Arabia.
Sure.
Let's start with this. What do you know about it before we start our questions?
Well, I know in terms of comparing it to other countries, I don't teach international economics, so I know that Saudi Arabia is more is virtually self-sufficient in what it's doing. I know the political atmosphere in the Middle East, which they have to deal with, and I know that they have an excellent relationship with the United States.
Yeah, that's great. So my first question to you is about the independence. So how do you think, from your perspective, how can the Saudi economy be diversified? It's like, how can it depend on many things, not just oil?
Well, I think that the Saudi economy is already doing that. Number one, I know, for example, that they have built a series of chemical plants, so they're basically utilizing the oil as a feedstock or as a raw material to produce other things that you have. Every time you do that, you add value. And so I know the Saudis are already doing that and doing it well. And the analogy in the United States would be close to here is the Shell oil plant that is taking natural gas, and it's called cracking, and they will produce polyester and other chemicals from the pipes that are coming from the natural gas being drilled here. Mm-hmm. The other thing I think the Saudis are doing, which is very important, and maybe the most important thing, is desalinization of water, because water is going to be the number one thing for all economies, and Saudi Arabia is included in that. The more they can do in desalinization, the more diversified their economy will be. But from a consumer point of view, desalinization is critical.
Yeah, that's cool. So another question is, from your point of view, how do you think we can attract foreign direct investments into the Saudi economy?
Well, we have talked about this, and I think that the best type of investments that would be good for the Saudi economy would be joint ventures with major U.S. companies, and not necessarily the largest U.S. companies, but companies that have a technology that Saudi would appreciate and need. And the reason that a joint venture is good is you would have American going in with expertise and capital, and Saudi would be providing capital, and a third company, the joint venture, would be responsible for whatever Saudi wanted to develop, and they both would have a stake in the system. Both companies, both American company and the Saudi company, would have a reason to succeed, and as opposed to buying an American company and then hoping that you can transfer the expertise over to Saudi Arabia. You want to, in my opinion, I think joint ventures are the easiest way to go.
So are you recommending, like, those companies are going to be, like, forever in Saudi, or, like, they only do one job and then they go?
No, forever.
That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
these would be joint ventures. They're not American companies that get transplanted to Saudi Arabia. They would be a third company created, half U.S. company, half Saudi Arabia, and that's how they would work.
Yeah, that's cool. And I think it's a smart idea to do, especially in Saudi. I think they are doing it right now. It's like sometimes they build, it's like airplanes or things like this from, like.
Well, that's right. I don't think they would joint venture with an aircraft company. They could, but it would be other things where they need the technology and the expertise.
Yeah, that's a good idea. What causes of the economy recession? I know a lot of people are saying we'll be having an economy recession in the next year. What do you think about this?
Well, recession is at the at its base is a lack of confidence on the part of the consumer. Now, the U.S. economy has the greatest percentage of the consumer as part of their gross domestic product. The consumer in America accounts for 70% of the economy. And so if the consumer doesn't have confidence in the economy, it means they're not confident they'll have a job. If they're not confident they don't have a job, they won't buy a car. If they don't buy a car, somebody in Detroit loses their job. That's a recession.
Hmm.
So it all comes back to consumer confidence.
Do you think we're going to be having this in next year?
No, absolutely not. The consumer debt has been coming down. Wages are going up. Unemployment is at a 80-year low. It's 3.7%, and hasn't been that good since 1960.
Hmm.
So it's I don't see a recession. Everybody has been predicting recessions since 2017. Every year was going to have a recession. And one of the reasons that it gets publicized is that for some reason people like to hear bad news. I don't know why it is, but newspapers like to publish bad news. And so I really feel strongly that the 2020 economy is going to be very good, and I can't see beyond that.
Okay. You have heard of Aramco, right?
Yes,
of course.
It's
like one of the biggest oil companies
in
the world. And now they started to go in public. What do you think of this idea? What do you think of this step?
Well, I haven't looked at I certainly haven't looked at any information on the public offering. I do know that from the Wall Street Journal that American investment banks think the price is too high, but that's their opinion. Like, I haven't looked at it. It's not my opinion. I don't know.
It's like $2 billion or something.
But there are only two reasons that companies go public. One is if they're a typical company in America would have an investor base that needs to be diversified. You know, somebody starts Microsoft in somebody's garage, and then 20 years later they decide, oh, now I own so much of this company, I'm going to go public so I have an avenue to diversify my investments. So one reason companies in America go public is for the diversification of the stockholder. The other reason companies go public is an anticipated need for capital. Now, I don't know what the Aramco balance sheet looks like. They may have all the capital needs, but my guess would be that at some point they want to be able to educate the American investor so that the American investor understands what Aramco is doing, such that if they have a need for further public issues go on from this original public offering, they will have a history with investors. And so if they decide they want to buy something big and they need money outside of Saudi Arabia, then they will be a public company and Americans would invest in it. And if they say, I need a tremendous amount of money to do this, and I have no idea what that would be, but if they needed outside capital, they would have a track record, published track record. Americans would know them. And I think it's always great for a company or a country to be as transparent as they can.
Yeah. And generally, is it going to reflect good in like companies or like sometimes it goes bad on them?
You mean in public companies?
Yeah. I'm saying if Aramco did go in public and they started selling, do you think this caused a good reflection or like bad one?
Well, I think that Saudi Aramco is very well known, but nobody knows what the financials look like.
Okay, what about like in any other company? If any company decided to go in public,
well, they go public for two reasons: they either need to diversify their investor base, or they need capital.
Does this always work?
No, of course not.
Okay,
there are companies that go public that shouldn't.
Why?
Well, because their technology is overblown. Their future is unbelievable, in the sense that, I mean, I've dealt with companies that are small, and we ask for financial projections, and in 10 years they're going to be the biggest company in the world. Well, that's obviously wrong, and those companies don't make it.
Okay. So another question. So what do you think is better, the capitalism or like the socialism system of economy?
Well, we talked about it in the class I teach, and the answer is not capitalism or socialism. The answer is free market capitalism under the rule of law. That's what we have here. We don't have pure capitalism. We have free markets that decide how capital is employed, and we have laws that protect investors, property owners. Everybody gets protected by the laws we have. If you have a deed to a house, nobody can take that house because the law is there to protect. So what's important in that statement is the fact that the capitalism that we have is not equivalent to what was socialism in the 19th and 20th centuries. Capitalism in the 19th or 20th centuries. It doesn't exploit. It is not doing that. And when we had when colonialists from Great Britain or from any country in Europe that was going into, let's say, India, for example, well, the free markets weren't determining how the investment was made. The government of England said, this company gets a monopoly here, this company gets a monopoly there, and that's not free market capitalism. And basically, it just allowed the monies of those countries to be taken. And so the reason I mention this is that the people starting in 1960, when the African nations became non-colonial, they shed the relationship with their European owners, and they became separate countries. A lot of them didn't understand. They thought capitalism was colonialism, which it's not. So they never went to free market capitalism. They went to socialism instead. And so it was bad for the country. And in fact, I spoke two successive years to people from Nigeria visiting here. Mm-hmm. And I said, you suffered two things. One was colonialism, and then you went to African socialism. And the only thing African socialism did was to bankrupt the countries. That was terrible. And the biggest thing about capitalism that people don't understand, the most important thing, is that you are rewarded for education, hard work, and risk taking. Meaning that if you work harder than the next person and you have better education, if you are somebody like Bill Gates inventing a computer system, a software system, you are going to be rewarded. And everybody knows in America, if you innovate and you work harder than the next person, you will be rewarded. Under socialism, everybody makes the same amount of money. They used to talk about this great, people talk about socialism getting more equal. And in most socialistic countries, there is equality, and it's because everybody's poor. And okay. So I think people need to understand and I've written an essay on the subject and it's maybe something that you can give to your audience.
Yeah, I see the article of the paper is Understanding Socialism and Capitalism, and under this episode in any of the social media, I'll be having a link of the article Dr. Dunn wrote, so everybody can check out and see. My final question, since it's a show about Saudi, I want to ask you about the Saudi students. We have more than 300,000 Saudi students in the United States, and some of them are studying economy. So how do you think Saudi students can improve the economy of Saudi Arabia when they go back to their country?
When they go back to the country, they've enhanced their skills. The Saudi students... almost every Saudi student that majors in something like engineering gets an A. Almost every Saudi student I've ever taught gets an A. They just work harder, they're smarter, and they get A's. They're great students.
Since they're in the United States, how can they take the benefit of this?
You mean back to their country?
Yeah.
Expertise. I mean, if you are going to work in a particular segment of the economy, you're coming equipped with American expertise on how to do business, or perhaps greater skills in engineering, what have you. And so they're going to make a great, great contribution to Saudi Arabia. The second way that they'll make a great contribution to Saudi Arabia is cultural. They will have seen the United States. They would have lived in the United States. They know what's good about the United States. They know what's not so good about the United States. And they can basically, whatever's good, they can help transplant into Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. That's my idea. Thank you so much, Dr. Dan.
I enjoyed it.
This was pretty much all the questions I have. And I'm really happy and proud and have learned a lot from you before the episode when we were talking outside and now. Thank you so much again. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening. This is Ferris Show, and we'll have you next episode. Thank you so much.